Hey, Mason, I really need a good gift for my generic loved one. Any ideas?
Oh, yeah, Andrew. I have the gift they need. If you sign up for GoDaddy's Economy Blogcast package, you'll receive 1 gig of disk space, 100 gigs of bandwidth, recording tools, and much more.
Whoa, with all those features, I'd guess that kind of package will run me at least $20 a month and be plastered with ads.
You're wrong, Andrew. The Blogcast Economy package is just $4.49 a month for 12 months.
That's a deal and a perfect way to get your own website, blog, or podcast started.
Oh, yeah, that is a deal. Plus, enter code MUGGLE when you check out. Save an additional 10% on any order. Get your piece of the internet at GoDaddy.com.
This is Professor McGonagall welcoming you all to MuggleCast, hoping you enjoyed. Dobby, come here. Here, Dobby.
Yes, well, I'd just like to say how very pleased I am to introduce MuggleCast to all of you. Thank you. Thank you.
Because point 4 will never be discussed, this is MuggleCast episode 143 for April 27th, 2008.
All right, guys. Well, I think we have a brand new Wall of Fame entry this week, episode 142. People loved the episode.
Yeah, they did. We got so many good emails about the show. It was just, like, phenomenal. Yep. The way people received it.
Yeah.
It was great. It's a great feeling seeing all this. And, I mean, for someone like Matt, who wasn't even on it, I'm sure he's very happy for us.
Yeah.
Doing such a fine
job.
I'm
really happy for you guys. You guys did an excellent job.
You're not jealous
at all. No, I'm not jealous at all. Just because you guys wouldn't wait an extra hour until I got back and everything, and you guys just wanted to do it without me, that's fine. You know, I have no hard feelings
at
all.
Dude, wasn't your computer, like, at the shop?
Well, yeah, I broke it, but...
Matt, it's not our fault that you spilled water on your keyboard.
Seriously. It was tea. It was not water.
Tea is far more
okay,
damaging.
And that makes all the difference.
It's not my fault. I was watching Sweeney Todd, and you know when you watch it, you just have to jump up and dance.
Oh, way to get the sympathy vote. Jeez. But we also got some negative feedback, too. We won't sit here and gloat. I mean, we got some negative feedback about the show. Some people disagreed with our opinions, but the majority of people did like it. So we'll cover all of that this week, and we got some news to get through and a little more trial discussion. I'm Andrew Sims.
I'm Eric Skull.
I'm Laura Thompson.
I'm Micah Tannenbaum.
I'm Matthew Britton.
And I'm Elisa Montfort.
Full show this week. Micah, what's in the news this week, buddy?
Well, the first thing I wanted to talk about before we got into the trial was that ABC News is going to be doing a documentary on J.K. Rowling, and the description reads that it's an in-depth profile which will air this November. It includes several interviews, the book tour for the final Harry Potter installment, and a tour of locations that inspired her characters. It even hints to what the future holds for Harry and his friends. So this is a little bit different, I think, than the one we saw a couple months back on ITV in the UK, and then it was re-aired in Canada. What are your guys' thoughts on this?
It's about time. I mean, you know, everyone's been wondering where this UK documentary, when it's finally going to show up in the US, and I remember I made the call out on the show, actually, I guess 4 or 5 or 10 episodes ago now, asking for people to send along the torrent, and we did get the torrent, and then a lot of people asked me for the torrent, and I didn't pass it along to them, but it's good. I hope they reuse some of the clips, because that documentary was beautifully shot.
So they're using most of these clips?
No, we don't know that for sure.
Oh, okay. Well, then, I mean, because it sounds to me like it'll be completely different, but also with... new information? Like they're hinting at like the, you know, the future of Harry Potter is all hinted at in here. So it sounds like Joe, who's now, you know, before, you know, this trial aside, who's comfortable sort of writing something else at the moment, is able to say, yeah, you know, in about a year or two, I'll be doing this. It'll be like this, you know, sort of kind of thinking about the future now, which is cool.
I think the whole future of Harry Potter thing is just an overused teaser, because that's what really everyone will ask her about these days, and what everyone puts in their story. So where does Harry go from here? You know.
And I mean, we already know. She told us pretty much everything. So
in the book.
It's like, surprise.
Well, this is a much bigger sort of stage to be doing a documentary on in terms of who's going to be doing it. I mean, I think the guy's name was James Runcie, who did the first one. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think he's sort of an independent film person, as opposed to, you know, ABC doing this on 2020. Barbara Walters will probably be involved somehow. And the report actually said that it was coming off of a documentary they did on the royal family and the Queen of England. The success that they had with that was the reason why they decided to go and do something on J.K. Rowling. Mm-hmm. So,
The second Queen of England, or, you know, Scotland.
Yeah, really. Yeah. Or at least richer than a queen. One thing worth noting is that last year, Barbara Walters did her 10 most fascinating people, or however many it was. And J.K. Rowling, I guess, was number one, but they had no new interview with Joe. But in the meantime, they had Barbara Walters interviewed all these other people, you know, Hannah Montana and
other
people that were big in 2007. Yeah, she was.
Hannah Montana made that list. How credible is that?
Well, that could be argued. But it's interesting, I think. We'll see. Like, if they couldn't score an interview with Joe, then
what it seems like to me in this interview that may be different from the other one is just that this one's going to be to a broader audience, to more a generic audience that doesn't necessarily know Harry Potter or familiar with it, but it's just a fan of watching the behind the scenes, like the 2020 60 Minutes kind of shows. The one that was in the UK and Canada that aired, it seemed more like a personal interview. It was mostly about Joe, and it just seems what they're saying about this new interview is it's mainly going to center around, you know, the Harry Potter series and about where Joe, you know, created him and all the places that sparked all the characters. And it was in the last interview too, but it did delve a lot into the biography of J.K. Rowling and not necessarily just the final book itself.
I think that's what I meant too when I was talking about the future of Harry Potter. I think they're hinting at what's going to happen next as far as books. I think that's or what like Joe's going to do about the future. Like I wasn't talking about the future in the story, because we do know that, but I think the
like
interview
her,
is
like her encyclopedia.
Well, exactly. Like they're going to ask her, like, you know, can you give us a date or something, like, you know, as or a general idea, ballpark sum, or maybe they'll be asking more about, maybe the interview will feature the theme park or something like that. You know, you know, it's kind of cool like that. I think if they're going behind like the scenes with like places that inspired characters, there'll still be plenty in it for the Harry Potter fan. But like you said, Matt, it's also like, as it's an ABC 2020 thing, it'll be really like also for a broader audience, which will appreciate it, you know, just the same.
What else is going on, Micah?
Well, the next thing we could talk about is the transcripts from the court trial were released earlier this week. And some interesting stuff. I mean, I didn't have a chance to go through all of them. There's 3 days worth that are there, and literally there must be over 1,000 pages, if not more, of you know, court documents.
It is really huge.
So,
thanks to Stanford for providing that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, how does that work? Is it a representative from? I think it was Harvard.
No, Stanford.
Oh, it
was
Stanford.
It's a. What is it? Like a student from Stanford is there doing the transcriptions or what?
Well, it seemed like the person was actually at the trial.
Right. But I'm just saying, because at every court trial, they have a
Well, they have a
woman
stenographer.
There on a
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. So was she an intern from Stanford? Or I mean, I guess we don't know the answer.
Well, don't question, you know, your blessings here, Andrew. Yeah. I mean, we provided these. These are great. So
yeah, I'm not sure how it works. Yeah,
yeah,
interesting.
It's strange, but I'm not a fan of reading courier post font documents, so didn't really get through this.
What annoyed me was what annoyed me are the numbers dictating the lines on the side, because they can't be transferred. Like, you know, like, yeah. I wanted to post it into a big giant Word doc, and it was like 100 pages, and with those numbers, it was like really hard to manage and kind of make into the. So yeah, but it was still those transcripts are really informational, really helpful. And as you guys know, it's been a week and there's still no verdict. It's almost been 7 days since you know, the trial itself, the testimony ended.
Well, I think you get a pretty good feeling for what went on, even if you only read maybe the first 20 or 30 pages of this, and the pages are pretty short. Having sat on a jury at the beginning of the year, I mean, you're thinking about J.K. Rowling sitting up there and having a judge talk to her just like he would talk to anybody else. And, you know, to see somebody who you hold in that high regard in that position basically saying, you know, and judges, they can look like the nicest people in the world, but when they want an answer to the question, you know, they're pretty forceful in the sense of saying, you know, just answer the question. And it's interesting to think of J.K. Rowling being in that kind of a position and,
well, you know,
kind of what she was going through at that time.
I'm sure it isn't as bad, though, if J.K.R. took this court on, like, Judge Judy or something. You know, I mean, Judge Judy always kicks down the, you know. But, I mean, there are no misgivings that judges aren't, you know, necessarily going to lay down. I mean, they're very forceful people, Micah, and you're right, because I've seen Judge Judy.
Well, good for you, Eric.
Okay.
I think we should get a book printed out of all this.
Of all the transcripts? Micah threatened to do that last week, and you said you'd sick the lawyers on him, Andrew.
Mm. Well, no, we'll only copy about 90.
No, I suggested we do a book analyzing the trial.
Oh, I thought you meant about
transcripts.
Because
we can do analysis. I'm looking through these text documents. I don't see a single copyright on here. This is public
domain.
We'll
only copy like 95% of all of it, then we'll just put some other stuff
in too. By the way, while we're on this real quick, I just want to say, I don't know if you guys seen this, but there's a brand new site out called the Maxicon, just maxicon.org.
Don't promote that.
No, I'm going to promote it. I'll tell you why. It's the Harry Potter lexicon completely copied and pasted onto a new site, and the guy changed the graphic, so instead of saying the Harry Potter lexicon, it says the Harry Potter Maxicon. And it's basically to stick it to Steve saying, how do you like it? I'm not saying I support it. I just think it's very interesting. Maxicon.org. Maxicon.org.
How did you come across that?
Twitter.
Oh.
Twitter.
Twitter.
That's interesting.
Somebody's tweet on Twitter.
Exactly.
It is kind of a stick it to you.
Despite where you fall on the issue, it's interesting to see how the fandom is reacting to the whole court trial.
Well, it is pretty obvious what the fandom, who they support.
Yeah.
Not everyone, though. I mean, there are quite a few people who are still calling Joe greedy, still. But
well, I'm not saying. I mean, just the majority.
Well, I think after last week's show, we did clear up quite a bit, at least to show. I mean, when we were talking about the fair use doctrine, we showed, I think, definitively how it was actually sort of a close call legally.
Oh, we did.
We really did do that.
Yeah,
and we did it. You know, quite a bit of justice. We received lots of praise for that.
Now, I think you gave the listeners a good enough insight on it to give them their own, give them the choice to give their own certain, you know, their own opinion on the matter.
Mm-hmm. Micah, any other news today?
Yeah, the final piece of news is that Electronic Arts, who has made every other Harry Potter video game, announced earlier this week the production of Half-Blood Prince is officially underway.
Oh, that's wonderful.
And I think you even posted an update here, Andrew, that their first review for the Nintendo DS version of the game is now available. But I'm going to defer to you on this one because you've actually talked to these guys. You talked to them last year when the Order of the Phoenix video game came out. What do you think about this?
Well, no, I think it's very exciting. They have this new game in the works, and I mean it was expected. It's definitely a big moneymaker for EA. What failed with Order of the Phoenix, though, was the hype. It got lost in the excitement of the movie and the book, and there was just really no fanfare for it. And it was a shame because with Order of the Phoenix, they put so much work into it.
Yeah,
they were really confident about this game. Jamie and I went to the EA Studios. I guess it was in March of last year, And oh, man, these guys are so dedicated. They have an entire floor of people dedicated to Harry Potter. It just seems like the fanfare wasn't up to speed. If you looked at the final reviews, they weren't fantastic.
Yeah.
But, you know, with every video game, Potter video game, they're calling this one the best one yet. And I'm sure it will be. They've had more time to develop.
Certainly. Is it the same people that are going to be working on it, you think?
Yeah. I recognize this one guy, Harvey Elliott.
Hmm.
I'm sure it'll be great if you like the Potter games. I don't know what else
I
to say.
I remember listening to
well,
your...
I think...
Oh, sorry. Go, Mike.
No, I think we're going to say the same thing. It's just that when listening to it, that those guys seemed really into it. They seemed like they were fans of the game,
so,
and they wanted
passionate
to put so much into it.
Absolutely.
Yeah. In terms of description and being
they
accurate.
They care so much about this
they
game,
do.
About Harry Potter. They're huge Harry Potter fans, which, you know, it's fantastic, but it, just the hype is not there for these games, and they need something.
Yeah. Well, I don't even think that's necessarily it. I mean, I think you're right in definitely some respects. If I had to quote, I mean, I think I might – I don't remember if I did this on MuggleCast, but I did review the game, mm-hmm. or I did buy the game, the PS2 version of the game, and talk about it a little bit. You could totally tell that they had really gone into the books and created certain characters, certain instances, little subtle sort of events that happened in the book would be shown
yeah,
in
a lot
the
of
game.
Yeah.
But – They did a lot of that backstory stuff, mm-hmm. but then I think it also got lost in the actual playability of the things. I mean, a lot of the more historical, more factual things could only show up as trivia or wizard cards. And what affected the Order of the Phoenix games, I think, was playability in the end, because every corner of Hogwarts was absolutely utilized. They did a great version of Hogwarts, which was completely accessible using the Marauder's map as a feature, but every single corner of it was used, and by the end of the game, I mean, it was free roaming, but it wasn't very fun to free roam at the end, and that's such a shame, because I remember listening to their report and seeing how psyched these yeah. guys were. So
that's what they were counting on, this open-ended gameplay where you can go wherever you want. Whether you want to do a mission or not, you can just go walk around the school. And at the time, it seemed like an amazing feature. And then, you know, it's still cool, and I'm glad they did it. I think it was needed.
I agree.
So it had more of a Mario or Legend of Zelda type feel to it, like more of a role-playing game.
They need to switch to Mario. I mean, Mario's a fantastic mm-hmm. game, and that didn't come from a book. I think, you know, need to take a page out of Mario's book, do some classic... left.
Well, I mean, it gives you the ability to just go around as you please. Is that what you're saying?
Right. Yeah, that's exactly what it is.
There's always going to be, especially for gamers, a lot of speculation and hesitation on getting a video game that's based off movies because, you know, they're always, I mean, that's the general consensus.
They always suck.
Yeah, they're always a letdown. And, you know, it's not always the case, but that's, you know, that's the majority of when video games are made based on films. It's just a lot of movies aren't made to be made into video games.
We can continue this on in another discussion. It probably could be a big debate, but
yeah, that about wraps up the news since we're not touching on point four.
All right, thank you, Micah. Point four will never be discussed on the show.
Are you sure we don't want to talk?
No, correction. Okay. As much as Micah loves point four.
And probably Ben, too.
Ben, too. Ben IM'd me. No, Ben emailed all of us, and he said he was an expert on point four and would like to come on the show if we ever discussed it. However, I don't
awesome.
Think that's...
Let's get him on.
I don't think that's happening.
We can discuss the finer points of the...
Yeah, the finer
it.
Points. Let's move on to announcements now. Thank you, everyone, as always, for voting for us on Podcast Alley. Don't forget, MuggleCast May is coming up, and we have to be number one because it starts with an M, just like MuggleCast May, April, MuggleCast March. Another announcement, last week I said MuggleCast Live would be happening probably May 9th. But then, apparently, the trailer, which is the reason we're going to be doing the live show, may not come out May 9th. It may come out the following week with Prince of Caspian, whatever.
Prince, it's just The Chronicles of Narnia, Prince Caspian.
Oh, right, okay.
Thank you.
Prince
yeah.
of Caspian.
So
yeah.
it may
yeah.
come out with that. In that case, it will be the following week. At any rate, keep an eye on MuggleNet.com and MuggleCast.com, and we will let you know when a live show will be doing our live show. Whenever a trailer is announced, whenever we get a date, then we'll announce a date for MuggleCast Live, which will either
whether the teaser trailer is announced.
Teaser trailer, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I wonder how good the you know, the teaser trailer is going to be content-wise as far as us discussing it on the live show. It'll be a fun live show, but the teaser trailer, remember, I mean, in the past, teaser trailers, they've always shown, you know, clips from previous movies and then just a little bit of a – that's why they call it a teaser, of course. But, you know, I mean, at the same time, so they're no longer doing it in Speed Racer, I guess. People think that it might be – Prince Caspian instead of Speed Racer.
Right. Which makes sense.
Which might make sense.
Fantasy.
Yeah.
The audience. It would have made sense more, though, if they did it in front of Speed Racer, since it's the same movie company that's, you know, producing both films.
Well, that's the other thing. Chronicles of Narnia isn't WB?
No, that's Disney.
It's a Walt Disney film.
It's Disney?
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah.
Well,
it's also a Walden Media, though. It's also based off a book, so maybe that's why they probably are going to put the teaser trailer, since it's one fantasy movie trailer,
oh, right,
and it's the same type of genre of audience that's going to be watching it.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess we'll see. But at any rate, just keep an eye on MuggleNet.com and MuggleCast.com for details about that. And Eric, yeah, you raise a good point. I mean, there isn't much in the teaser trailers, but I was figuring with live calls, we could go for 8 hours.
It'll still be the top news of that week anyway.
Right.
Well, let's hope. Unless they get a verdict of the trial, but...
Oh, jeez. Yeah. Oh, please don't happen on the same week. Be too much to talk about.
It'll be like a mini Summer 07 all over
again.
Yeah,
we'll have another 12-hour live show and it won't even be intended. But,
well, Warwick Davis is in Prince Caspian.
Is he?
Oh, yes, he
is. No wonder the teaser trailer's going with there.
Oh, that makes
going
sense.
With that film.
Yeah, because of Warwick Davis connection.
All makes sense now. Hey, like I said, episode 142 was met with a lot of fanfare, and people were smart. They created a Facebook group suggesting goes in the Wall of Fame. Because I was saying, if anyone thinks an episode should go in the Wall of Fame, find a way to gather people's support. The Facebook group has about, 60 or 70 members now. So I think we're going to induct episode 142 into the MuggleCast Hall of Fame, Wall of Fame, which is just a little page where we showcase our best episodes for new listeners. So what do you guys think?
Cool.
I think it should definitely go there. I think it's one of our best episodes.
Definitely. Yeah. We did a great job.
I wanted to have some like celebratory music, but I couldn't really find anything. So,
Cool in the Gang.
Cool. Well, yeah, I thought that's overplayed. So,
yeah, it is. You're right.
I don't know. So, episode 142.
Woo!
In the Wall of Fame!
Woo!
Yay! Yay! All the kids.
Did you
are
just
happy.
Pull that okay. from iMovie or GarageBand?
No, that was the. That was the MuggleCast audience.
Your brother having a birthday party or something?
That was the collective MuggleCast audience.
They're all 8-year-olds?
No,
they sit outside your room like TRL?
Listen. They're actually all down on the street outside my window. I can look out and wave to them.
I'm sure.
I'll go wave to them again. Hey, kids!
Oh, so they have delayed reaction problems.
No, it's just they're young and slow.
Oh.
Anyway, let's move on to Muggle Mail now.
Our first one comes from Marge Miller, 52, Phoenix, Arizona. She says, "Dear MuggleCast, you put a lot of thoughtful debates and arguments about the recent trial, and there was a mention about the fans' reactions to Steve Van Der Ark. But what about any of you from MuggleNet, MuggleCast, Leaky, etc.? What would you do if you ran into Steve anytime soon? Would he be invited to any more fan conventions? I'm also wondering about JKR's mental health. She suffered from depression before. Might this whole trial affect her in the same way? True, she has family, but still, it's going to be difficult."
I think this is an interesting question. I personally would talk to him. I don't think a fandom discussion will, or this trial discussion will ever come up with anyone.
People might. But as for anybody that works with any of the sites, I couldn't see any of us actively shunning him if he walked up on the street.
If any of us did approach him, I think we just, at least act in a professional manner, at least. You know, be polite. Just, not you can't just, like, look at him and go, and run away.
Need to be rude.
I don't necessarily agree with that. At least I think the people who already know him and have met him before, like a number of us have, I don't think we would be that, I don't know what the right word is, but, I don't think we would be offensive to him or rude to him. But I think the casual fan who may know who he is, who goes up on the street and sees them, or sees him at a convention if he's invited, you know, I don't know what the reaction would be. I could think that their reaction would be actually, you know, somewhat inappropriate. You guys don't see that?
No,
at all?
I think that
I see. There'll always be ignorant people out there.
Yeah,
I mean, just because you know you disagree with what if you disagree with where he stands and everything.
I still like the guy, you know.
Yeah.
Personally.
Oh, I don't know the guy, so I mean, I can't give my I can't really judge him because I don't really know him.
But there's not going to be this whole like silent treatment. Like, are you going to say like the fans as a whole are going to give Steve the silent treatment? Like, is
I mean,
that what
Steve
we're like?
Steve is still a fan of the books and the series.
Yeah, just
he's
like
still
us.
Considered a fan. I mean, this whole thing is really strictly, you know, business and legal stuff. This isn't, you know. Well, I mean, we could a lot of fans will treat it as a person. As personal, but
well, you also have to wait to see what necessarily the verdict ends up being, because if it's something that is going to end up negatively affecting J.K. Rowling, which you know this whole trial has negatively affected her to begin with, that could also cause people to act in a different way than maybe they normally would have had this not happened or had she won.
Yeah.
So. You know, people's opinions can change in an instant based upon something like that. The overall comments that we've seen from people, and I know we've gotten emails on both sides, but they've tended to heavily favor Joe and support for her. I just don't see people, you know, going up to him on the street or at a convention or at any other event and just being personable towards him. I really don't.
You're saying people won't
be maybe
nice?
Maybe I'm alone in that thinking. But, you know, and then how, if you're the head of a convention, would you want to bring somebody who has been involved in a lawsuit with J.K. Rowling to that convention?
Oh, look, this is a big emotional thing. Like, everybody's – I think it's way over the top. I think it's been blown out of proportion here. I mean, we're actually asking ourselves as MuggleCasters, are we going to talk to Steve after this happens? Like, we're actually asking ourselves that question. I mean, I think
the trial is something that's happening. Marge asked us that question.
Well, yeah. But we're
Marge did ask.
Okay. So Marge asked that question, but I mean, I think it's a fair question in principle. But I think we've taken it. It's gone on for like 3 minutes so far, you know, maybe more. What about the second part of the question? What about regarding J.K.R.'s mental health?
I think what she's been saying, and someone emailed in, and what annoyed me, someone emailed in and said, "Look, you guys are falling into her emotional trap where she's threatening to not do the encyclopedia. It's to get all of our attention." And I agree with that. And I said that on the show last week.
Yeah, you did.
And I think it's kind of low. I think Joe may have just been in the heat of the moment and said that out of frustration. I don't think she meant it. At the same time, she could have said it to get the fans' attention,
and that's what,
which I think is kind of not cool.
Yeah, not cool. But I had mentioned last week, too, like, as Harry Potter fans, we can't help but be on Joe's side. But what I was saying when I said that, too, just to clarify, was that it's not necessarily a good thing that we can't be on Steve's side. You know, I think we are so bound to JKR and that putting JKR on trial, I mean, it's Warner Brothers, it's, you know, versus RDR, but the fact that Joe's on trial, that it's this Joe versus Steve thing all of a sudden, it's a smokescreen, I guess, but we're all kind of trapped following JKR. I mean, I think that's what was great about last week's episode, was we were able to sort of push things and say, what is the objective view here? But, I mean, I just think what Andrew's saying, too, the whole, you know, JKR saying that she might not write an encyclopedia after that, like, that's kind of a threat, and it's really not cool. There's a lot of things that aren't really cool about that.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, it's really up to her. I mean, it's her entire series. It's her world. If she wants to do something, then she can do it. I don't think anyone really has any say of what she can and can't do, whether it's cool or not.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm just saying, look at the event as a whole, just the overall stress of the situation and having to deal with this, you know, having to deal with this lawsuit, you know, from beginning to end, from when this started, you know, back on October the 31st. And even before that point, you know, when the lawsuit was filed, you know, the overall stress, and maybe that lended itself to her saying these
things. But she's a big girl, Micah.
And then,
she is a big girl.
She's J.K. Rowling. She's very, very... I mean,
well, but maybe she's saying, hey, look, Eric, my book is being taken and copied. If my work is just going to be taken and duplicated, why should I bother? Why should I take the time and effort to put into writing this encyclopedia if somebody's just going to turn around and take my work and use it for their own profit
okay,
in the end anyway?
But that's a little bit different than saying, I mean, she's been drug all this way. You know, has it hurt her feelings?
Well, that plays into it. Maybe she's stressed out from the event.
That's what it is.
Based
yeah.
on some of her responses, they were very emotional, weren't
yeah.
they?
And, I mean, she really does strongly feel that way, and that's the whole deal, so. Yeah.
Well, and also, we just have to keep remembering here that it didn't have to come this far. It's not like Joe and WB just, you know, up and said, oh, we're taking you to court. They gave them opportunities to back down, and they didn't.
Right. Yeah, that I think is what made it. That's what brought it out.
Okay, the next Muggle Mail comes from Bill 29 of Kansas City. His subject is missing the motive. The fandom are the ones that should be upset. It's kind of long here, so I'm gonna go really fast. I'd like to comment on one issue that I think was completely underrepresented. I'd like to comment on one issue that I think was completely underrepresented during your discussion of the trial, though one of you, I believe it was Eric, made a couple attempts. You, me, and the rest of the fans are being manipulated by lawyers that insult our intelligence at every turn. This trial has, or should have, nothing to do with JKR's feelings or anyone else's. It may be true that she doesn't need the money, but that doesn't mean that it isn't about money. It clearly is. She is a billionaire, Steve Vander Ark is not, and he put considerable work into this encyclopedia. She said, says the material is sloppy and lazy in book form, but worthy of her personal endorsement online. The nature and quality of the work in question was not an issue at all until an attempt to sell it was made, so that argument doesn't hold. Every successful fiction has unofficial companion books, and you can't spot them from a mile away. You can spot them from a mile away. No one's going to get confused, and even that is beside the point. This case is about whether or not Steve Vander Ark is negatively impacting her existing works, not something she might create in the future. Many of the MuggleCast hosts have taken emotional bait. I find the comments that anyone that sides with SVA is clearly lacking principles extremely offensive. The emotion in the trial may be based in reality, but I assure you that JKR's tearful admission that she just might not be able to carry on if she loses this case is a deliberate legal strategy, as well as a childish threat. All this talk of putting Joe through this is nonsense. Remember that she is the aggressor here. Steve Vander Ark is defending himself. Are we, honestly, to get all twisted up inside because she needs to take a few days to fly all the way across the Atlantic to testify in a trial that she brought? And I say she because all of this is all Warner Brothers dragging her into it, then she wouldn't be up there crying. I want her to keep creating, especially in the HP universe, as much as anyone. Let's be careful, however, not to automatically give her the moral, ethical, and emotional high ground. Why for her is it not about the money and for him trying to make a quick buck? SVA wouldn't need to defend his considerable work if all he was trying to do was cash in. This isn't about us wanting her to do more work. This isn't about her current works being disparaged or diminished. This isn't about her feeling sad inside. This is about fair use under the law, and based on the four legal criteria, I think he is well into the clear. If this suit isn't over money, then it is most certainly over ego. Thanks. Once again, Bill.
Yeah, I like this email because a lot of people emailed in saying similar things, that we have to keep the emotions out of it and keep in mind that this is a court trial with law. This isn't about who can put on the best, you know, waterworks show. This is about the laws and the four points of the fair use doctrine. And I think he's absolutely right.
This was a good email to choose, Andrew, because it is so so completely passionate in the direction that we didn't even go in. You know, I mean, we had made points to try to be objective, but this is really the other side, and it's saying that Joe is a smokescreen.
Yeah.
It's saying that all of this is supposed to guide us and misguide us into taking sides without actually realizing that it's, you know, legally it might not be a good enough case.
I just wanted to point out two things that Bill brought up. First was him saying that she doesn't need the money, but that doesn't mean that it isn't about the money. It clearly is. She's a billionaire, and Steve Vander Ark is not, and he put considerable work into his encyclopedia. That's great, but the work is not his.
Exactly.
You know, it is his in the sense of he took the time and effort to organize it in a certain way, but the work itself, the actual context, is not his. And then also the comment about, she says the material is sloppy and lazy in book form, but worthy of her personal endorsement online. Yes, it is worthy of her endorsement online. We don't have the book. We don't know what it looks like in book form. She does. Therefore, that is why she was able to comment on it. You're not able, Bill, to comment on what the book looks like because you haven't read it.
I've said before, though, yeah, that has there are pages of the book online, and what it is, it's an A to Z index.
Well,
I'm with Bill here.
And therefore,
can I say something?
What?
You're with him in that sense?
Well, I'm with him in that. Hold on one second, Elisa. I'm with him in that. I'm not taking either of your sides. What I'm saying is that I've seen some pages of the book. They're online on that legal website. And it's an A to Z index. It's just a copy and paste of what Steve did. And Steve didn't put work into this. He put work into his free website, but not into his book that he's paying for, that
yes,
he's making people
exactly.
pay for.
That's what I think the context is. It's just exactly that. It's not sloppy and lazy to put together stuff for volunteer work or to put something up for free that's available by access for fans who are really into the books. But it is sloppy and lazy to take what had previously been free for the past, 6 to 8
yes.
years and then
yes.
try to sell it when yes. people can still get it for mm-hmm. free online.
Well, there is a sloppy and lazy element to just taking something and copying it over, right?
Yes.
I mean, oh, yeah.
That's why I'm not agreeing with what he's saying here. And I think it was worthy of her personal endorsement online because, mm-hmm. you know, she looked at what he did, what MuggleNet did, what Leaky did, what a host of other fan sites have done, and she acknowledged that. And it's impossible for everything, the way that it's organized online, to be put into the book the exact same way. And she even brought up points, some spells, a character that were not, you know, the same as what she knew it to be when she wrote the book. So I think that's also the points that she was referring to when she said it was sloppy and lazy.
Well, you can also, can't she also say it's sloppy and lazy compared to, you know, her encyclopedia that she's going to be posting?
But it's not the same thing. And J.K. Rowling's isn't even an encyclopedia. I mean, this is one thing that we discussed last week. And thank God she is calling it an encyclopedia because her case wouldn't stand as much. I mean, yeah, it wouldn't affect the fair use doctrine, but it would affect what else WB is trying to fight. The fact that J.K. Rowling is developing her own encyclopedia and Steve's would take away sales from that.
Well, I...
Go ahead, Elisa.
Okay, I just wanted to say, I think it was Eric or someone had pointed out that this was a really passionate email and sort of like the opposite argument. And, you know, what's curious about that is that passion is an emotion. And secondly, at the end it says, if this suit isn't over money, then it's most certainly over ego. I have to be honest. I don't really care what it's over. I don't care if it's over money or ego or what Bill or anyone else thinks is the root of the issue. Who cares? I don't care I don't care if she cries. I don't care if she goes out and says that she hates infants and puppies. I don't care what she says or what she does. I don't care what Steve Vander Ark does. None of that matters to me. And I respectfully, completely, and utterly reject the notion that as Harry Potter fans we're somehow incapable of also being objective. I can be objective. I can't speak for anyone else, but I'm being objective when I say that I really honestly don't care how many waterworks she or anyone else puts on. If this is, in my opinion, about the principle, and I do agree with Bill that it is, in fact, about the law. And as a law student, I just personally think that the law is on J.K. Rowling's side. That's all that there is to it. So I think, you know, I think that just because we disagree does not necessarily make us unable to be objective, and somehow others who side with Steve Vander Ark are objective. I mean, clearly there was a lot of emotion in the responses to us as well, so we're certainly not the only ones.
You say, girl.
Yeah, really.
I want to bring out two things. First of all, you really offended a lot of people that I know, actually, Elisa, last week when you said that people don't have principles if they don't know. But I mean, you said like the worldwide had no principles out there, and that was kind of really brash and kind of inappropriate, I think. But that's not what I'm talking about. I'm not calling to chew you out. But the Harry Potter lexicon, Micah mentioned the fan site award, which had been given. Now, I found in the transcript something that I just want to share with you guys quickly because it kind of goes with one of the points that this Bill guy was saying.
Hold on. Wait. Can I just interrupt really quick? I mean, like, no, like, I don't, I'm not offended by you, you know, saying that, Eric, but I do want to attempt to at least respond to that. Okay. So can I respond to the
Go.
Offensive thing?
Go.
Yeah, you're a host.
Okay. Okay. Good. Cause I didn't want to skip over that. I believe what I said, and if I didn't, then I will apologize for not making this clear. But what I said and what I meant was that if people cannot understand how this can be an argument over principles, then they are probably not principled themselves. It doesn't mean that if you disagree that you don't have principles. You can disagree and not have and still be a principled person, understand. But then you're disagreeing on principle. You're disagreeing based off of the premise of law and not based off of, in fact, emotion. So that's all that I was saying, is that if someone says this isn't about principles, this is only about money and only about profit and taking a very cynical approach, then I would argue that they haven't seen, you know, they haven't had experience in the principled version of the law before. So,
well, I always got along with my school principals. So, getting on with this thing here, I have this quote. I had this quote here that I wanted to bring up before we move on, and it's a really good. I don't want to call JKR out any more than, especially any more than Bill just did. But there's a quote here that someone brought to my attention as well. It's on day one of the trial, and I'm gonna run through it fast. Question: this is to J.K. Rowling in court, trial day one. Question: Did in 2004 you give a fanside award to the Harry Potter Lexicon website? Answer: yes, I did. Question: is that the only website you've given fansite awards to? No, I believe given the fansite award about 8 websites now. Question: why did you give the award to the Lexicon? J.K. Rowling answers: I believe then that Mr. Evander Ark was showing quite obsessive interest in the Harry Potter books, but in a positive way. I didn't think that what he created was of immense use, but I thought that it demonstrated a real passion for my work, and I gave the award, I would have to say, as a kind of A for effort. I could see that time had gone into his creation. Question: did you give the award because you thought the site was of great quality? Answer: no. Okay, so J.K. Rowling has said that, but then I've gone back to J.K. Rowling's official site when she gave Vander Ark the Harry Potter Lexicon the site award, and this is what J.K. Rowling wrote then. This is such a great site that I have been known to sneak into an internet cafe while out riding and check a fact rather than go into a bookshop and buy a copy of Harry Potter, which is embarrassing. A website for the dangerously obsessive, my natural home. So
later it was cleared up in the trial, Eric. I think it was J.K. Rowling herself that said she had said that on the website to be nice to
them
about it.
Well, that's exactly what I'm trying
to prove.
Them,
because she needed a reason to give them the fansite award.
So she lied.
That's the one.
Is that what it is? Or so she made them look good? Like, I'm just saying, is J.K. Rowling being honest on her site? I mean, she gives a fansite award to someone who has effort, but who she doesn't necessarily like as much as she tells us she likes. It's
Well, I wouldn't like them either if someone created the MuggleCast encyclopedia and then we endorsed it and then they turned it into a book.
Well, the MuggleCast wiki is fun to read. This isn't a
book.
But they're not turning it into a book. She wrote this. I'm saying she wrote this about the website, and in court here she's responding to how she felt then about the website. And I'm saying, you know, what can we trust with JKR now? Because that really threw me. That threw me that she was so kind of against it. I guess some of it's the heat of this court, but she said basically she saw it as obsessive but not very useful. And she's telling us when she gave him the fansite award that it was so useful it was her second home.
She used it herself.
Yeah. And so I'm thinking, well, how can we trust JKR now is my question. Because, I mean, clearly this is – I can't help but think there's some reason into what Bill is saying and what I had guessed before, that it's kind of a smokescreen to have JKR in this trial at all, that it's kind of confusing the legal reasons.
I think that's an interesting point, but I think it was said later on that she did say that to create – she did say what she said on the fansite award to create purpose.
But that's an issue with me because it means she slanted the truth.
Well, you got to say what you got to say in court to protect your
That's true. That's true.
If she said it was, if she admitted in court that it was useful to her, then that's basically saying it's useful. That meets one of the fair use doctrines. Is it useful? Does it give purpose to the what was the point?
Mm. Whose side is that, though?
It gives purpose. Do you remember we discussed that last week? It gives purpose to the
if it creates sort of appreciation, if it enhances the appreciation.
That was it. Yeah,
that was point one.
Yeah, yeah. So I think that could answer it.
Just one final thing, though, that Bill mentioned was the fact that sort of J.K. Rowling started this whole thing. And I just want to say, reading through some of the testimony from the first day, and Laura mentioned this before, it didn't have to get to this point. And it was actually, I believe it was Warner Brothers who filed the suit. And if you look through that testimony, RDR Books, okay, did a lot of underhanded stuff throughout the course of this entire process. So to say, hey, Joe, you started this, I don't really buy into that, because I know that Joe tried to resolve the situation and did not want it to escalate to the point that it got to. And RDR Books was not compliant at all with Warner Brothers from the get-go.
One last email today from Jonathan Wu, 13 of Rochester, New York. Hi, guys. I'm currently listening to episode 142 when you are talking about J.K. Rowling and her case against RDR Books and etc. I would like to know when we are going to find out the ending or whatever it's called in court, where they choose what happens to who. Sorry if I sound confusing. Keep up the good work. Well, we get your point, Jonathan. And it's a couple weeks at this point. Right? And the judge is going to make his decision? Is that correct, Micah?
Yeah, I believe so. I mean, I haven't heard anything official really in anything that we've read that says he's going to deliver a verdict on this date or that date.
No, there's no set date, I think.
Well, weren't they going to go to the Supreme Court?
He even said.
It could.
No, that's only if they appeal. Yeah. I mean,
which will
whoever
happen.
Loses this case is going to appeal. There's no question about that. But the thing is, the law is so vague in this case, and we talked about it on the last show, and even Elisa brought up, you know, previous court cases which Judge Patterson is going to have to use in his decision, obviously. And it's just, it's going to take a while to come to a decision about this, and that's why he, you know, was so strongly trying to support the idea of a settlement, which I don't think is going to happen either. So it's going to be interesting. It's going to be a while before we hear something.
Anyway, enough trial talk for today. Laura, we have to let you go now because you're like being studious or something.
Yeah, you know.
Bye, Laura.
Bye, Laura.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.
It's time now for chapter by chapter. This week, we're going to take a look at chapter 27, the final hiding place. It's a extremely short chapter.
The end.
It's literally 6 pages long in the UK edition.
Ooh. You're reading the UK version. Ooh.
Yeah, I got my UK book here. Brings back memories. Final hiding place. And Matt, what happens in this chapter? A brief summary.
This is the chapter after the Gringotts chapter where they left on the... Do we even know what dragon it is?
Oh, it's not...
Is it even
talked
about?
Yeah, we don't know what that is. Because we thought, we had speculated that it was the
Opali
because of the Opali, but actually it's just any kind of other dragon, but it's been blinded, you know, by living down in the dark so long. So... We were wrong.
Right. So we find Harry, Hermione, and Ron in the middle of their flight on the dragon to wherever the dragon is going. They have absolutely no idea where the dragon is going because they have absolutely no idea where they are. They left Diagon Alley, and they are flying over, I believe it is like Muggle villages. And so,
It said London.
It's the outskirts of
right.
London.
Well, and yeah, they flew over London.
Yeah, sorry. And here's the first thing that got me. What? Don't people see these guys flying on a dragon? Shouldn't this be reported? It's like, I mean, you know, whatever. Obviously, they got to get out of there. But maybe if it was darker, like, I don't know. Like, this is just...
Well, you know, London is very cloudy. I mean, it rains a lot.
It's a temperate zone.
There's overcasts all the time. But
I guess you could make that excuse, sure. It's just like the flying car thing. But even with...
They were seen.
Yeah, they were seen, weren't they?
They were seen in the flying car, yeah. But, I mean, the point I want to make is that they couldn't control the dragon. They can't steer the dragon, even if they wanted to, because trying to do so would alert the dragon to their presence. They have to lay... They are so helpless, powerless to really control anything on the back of this dragon, because they can't really let him know that they're there. Even when they jump off the dragon, they have to do it, you know, stealthily because, well, it probably hasn't eaten in a really long time. And, you know, in the quote in the book is three highly edible humans were riding on its back. So it's kind of dangerous, but cool all the same. They were, you know,
yeah,
they're holding on for dear life.
And the book also says the dragon was flying fairly high. And so probably if anyone ever saw them, they probably think it was a plane or something. Kind of like how only like 6 or 7 muggles actually reported that they saw a flying car. There was probably a bunch more people, but they just shrugged it off and thought it was just something else.
Oh, it's just another flying car.
Here's another question.
Yeah.
Because it was because Diagon Alley can't be seen by muggles, at least at first, and I guess, you know, muggle parents of wizard children do go to it, you know, as we've seen. I guess we saw the Grangers in Flourish and Blots in book 2, but I'm thinking because it came out of Diagon Alley and kind of went straight up into the sky, maybe it was protected under some kind of concealment charm, you know, like so that they wouldn't have seen the... Because, I mean, it's not exactly like the Leaky Cauldron that Diagon Alley is geographically in the same location as, like, a buildings in London. It's not like... So you see what I'm saying? That the dragon might still be protected because...
Well, I have a question about that. Is Diagon Alley, like, unmapped territory?
Well, you'd think that,
like, if you flew over it, would you see it as a muggle?
Think that muggle people would have realized if there's a sort of 3-block-long gap in between, you know, the streets and stuff.
Well, right, I know.
So I would imagine,
unless like the Ministry of Magic bought the property.
I think it's like basically like the same excuse they use for Hogwarts, the castle at Hogwarts. You know, when anyone comes across it, you just can't see it, or it just doesn't even exist. Like, there are probably buildings all around it, just like with Grimald Place. The apartment or the house just comes out of nowhere. I mean, it's magic.
It is magic.
It's magic, guys.
And it could be like St. Mungo's, which is what? An actual department store location, Purge and Dowse, mm-hmm. And then that's actually happens to be St. Mungo's.
Yeah.
So we've seen a big variety of buildings used, sort of how they work.
So the dragon lands. The dragon is descending, and Harry, Hermione, and Ron jump off the back into the water as soon as they think they're close enough. And they get to the shore, and immediately Harry summons all these protective charms. And Matt, you're saying this is the first time he did this. Do you think there was a reason?
Yeah. Well, I think basically because he was the person who was at emotional ease at the moment, because I think it says he was the first person to get on shore and collect himself, probably because he's the one who was thinking.
Yeah, it said Hermione just collapsed.
Hermione had pretty much an emotional breakdown, it seems, when she was at the dragon. She was crying during the entire flight, so she was probably collecting herself that whole moment too. I mean, it was a pretty traumatic experience. And Hermione is usually the one who actually does all the summoning charms, and this was just Harry's time, his first time to do it.
You would think now that flying on a back of a dragon wouldn't be very traumatizing at this point in their lives.
No,
you
wouldn't. I mean, it's still a big dragon.
Wouldn't that be like just riding on in the back of a car to them?
She's crying because she has like half a dozen sores on her body.
Yeah.
Too.
Well, I'm just putting it all in perspective.
You don't actually realize, though, how high they are in the air on this dragon, which is 3-4 times their size. I mean, even if you were realistically 20 feet off the ground on something really hard, something really huge, and you're holding on by like these scales, these metallic, there's no handlebars, there's no seat belts, and you're going so fast at such a speed. The wind is, I mean, it's amazing they were able to hold on. I mean, they were holding on for dear life, and the higher they went, the colder it got. They're just happy to be alive. I'm surprised they could move once they got in the water. You know, because of how fast they'd been traveling.
Yeah, I hear you.
Yeah.
I was trying to be funny.
I can
see
that.
So the big part of this chapter is that Harry gets into Voldemort's mind. I mean,
yeah, as big...
by the big part of it, I mean all 4 pages.
out of six.
Yeah.
It's really cool. I like this part a lot, this scene.
So basically, Harry gets a glimpse inside Voldemort's mind, and this usually occurs when Voldemort has, you know, extreme emotional reactions to something. And we all know what it is. We see Voldemort at Gringotts in front of a group of bodies and things. And there's this one goblin who's saying, like, forgive me. They went in, and he's, like, extremely, extremely disgruntled right now. and he's asking, what did they take? Or, and they said something about, let me see. Do you guys know what it said?
Well, I mean, at this point, Voldemort is the most furious I think we've ever seen him thus far. And he just starts killing people left and right.
Well, because this is the scene where Voldemort finally comes to the conclusion that they know they're after the Horcruxes, and they know what they are.
Or he suspects it. It's just the first time he suspects it. He's even angry when he finds out that his Horcruxes are missing, but... I mean, he found out he lost one of them, and he thinks he still has, like, four or something, but, you know, later he realizes it doesn't. I mean, when you were speaking about if Harry went in intentionally to Voldemort's mind in this instance, no, but I think in this point he was expecting it. You know, I mean, the reason that it's called the final hiding place, this is pretty much, you know, Harry, you know, says to Ron and Hermione, I think they may have noticed we broke out of Gringotts, or maybe Ron said that. Yeah, that was Ron
who said
and
it.
And so they really know that Voldemort is about to find out, and they're going to have to go as fast as they possibly can. And so Harry's kind of – I bet Harry is expecting to be so taken into Voldemort's mind when he wants to kill everyone. Mm-hmm. But
well, this is what I find fascinating is when Voldemort gets very angry and very emotional, he always becomes submissive to occlumency, and that's why Harry can go into his mind.
I don't know that it's occlumency.
Because he's
vulnerable.
I mean,
if someone were trying to penetrate his mind in the normal defenses, he would still be able to rebuff them. I mean, I think this is...
But he couldn't in this situation. That's what
Matt's saying. But you always see him going into his mind when Voldemort is very emotional.
Well, that's when it crosses the barrier. Usually they would live in harmony, but when Voldemort's very angry, it's that his anger is felt through all sort of parts of Harry's connection, and it crosses over.
I would have thought that Voldemort would have, you know, done something to prevent this, because I mean he knows that Harry has this ability.
Well, he was.
He knows that this happens.
The in book 5 they said we have reason to believe that Voldemort is now using occlumency against you, like trying or
right exactly
yeah to prevent Harry from blocking his. But in this case, I mean, you guys got to think about this. Somebody who knows and thinks that they're immortal, somebody who made 7 Horcruxes, put him in the far reaches of the globe, who was absolutely not concerned with really really dying, has found out that some obscure item, this little cup, of all the things in the Bellatrix Lestrange's vault, or in Lestrange's vault, this little cup, the one he turned into a Horcrux, and Voldemort's daring not to believe it. He's just, you know, maybe they like cups. You know, maybe Harry has a cup fetish I don't know about. You know, because he can't possibly accept that the heinous truth, the horrible truth that somehow they found out about his Horcruxes. And
no, he knows they know.
No, he doesn't.
He
not
just
yet.
Knows.
He doesn't.
Yeah, he does.
No, he doesn't.
He's trying to. No, he knows that he's safe. He's in denial of the fact that they have them, because he's in denial saying, no, this Horcrux is safely in this place. He will never know about this one.
Well, that's the thing.
Well, J.K. Rowling writes it as, it could not be true. It was impossible. Nobody had ever known. How is it possible that the boy have discovered his secret? So I think he did know.
Yeah.
And I mean, what are the chances, too?
He certainly knows that Harry has a Horcrux of his, but at this point, I think until he discovers that the other ones are gone... that some of the other ones are gone, he doesn't really know how screwed he is.
No, right. He knows. He's trying to convince himself that it's not true. And he tries to convene that that it's not true that Harry knows all about them. Who can possibly tell Harry what the Horcruxes are? And then he goes to Dumbledore. Yeah. And he goes, surely Dumbledore was always the one who was always after me and knew my secrets.
He's considering the possibilities, but at this point I don't think he knows that they certainly have him pinned. I really don't, because he was certain.
Because it's the reason why he goes. Then why does he go to all his Horcruxes then after this argument?
Because he wants to double the protection
exactly.
Just in case. He wants to double the protection just in case, and he says
he wants to make sure.
He goes after the Horcruxes. To make sure. I mean, he's not 100% certain at this point.
He's more worried than he's ever been.
I wouldn't say he's 100% certain, but he's worried. He's absolutely worried, and that's why he decides to go out and look for these Horcruxes. He's in denial. There's no question about that. But I don't think he knows 100% certainty that Harry has destroyed all these other Horcruxes. There's no way he's going to know until he actually gets to these places.
Right. Like, he was obviously suspicious. I mean, I think that's why he was going through all of those justifications with himself and saying, oh, no, he couldn't know this. How could he know that? Whatever else. But there's no possible way that he knew that, you know, whatever, Regulus Black and had taken the locket. And there's no possible way that he knew that Dumbledore had gotten the ring and whatever else. So, I mean, he was obviously suspicious enough that he wanted to go out and protect them and find them. But there's no way he could have known the specifics at that point.
This leads back to our original point. Why Harry could get into Voldemort's mind. And I think it's just that Voldemort was so distracted, he can't concentrate on keeping Harry out. Isn't that it? I mean, can you subconsciously keep your mind closed from intrusion?
Well, he's very powerful.
Especially when a really big blow hits you.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's what I'm saying.
I mean, this was a tremendous blow.
This is such a big hit that he's not concentrating on. I mean, yes, he is thinking about Harry, but he's not thinking about keeping Harry out of his mind. He's got this huge blow to his plan. I mean... You know,
well, if you look throughout the course of this book, though, it wasn't more about trying to maybe get into Harry's mind and see where he was or what he was doing, trying to lure him into another place. Voldemort was so committed throughout this entire book, you know, to getting the Elder Wand, to pursuing that whole thing. And Harry was able to follow along. And if not for Voldemort, you know, letting his defenses down in this way, Harry would have never figured out these pieces to the puzzle.
Yeah.
And, you know, this is just kind of like the final moment where, you know, Voldemort is starting to, you know, like you were saying, Andrew, he's starting to let his guard down. And he's just not as, fortified as he was initially.
Well, and I mean, what an idiot when, you know, he's having the thoughts that he's having right now are the most important thoughts Harry could hear other than hearing the exact locations of where the Horcruxes are.
Well, now he knows for a fact that Nagini is one of his Horcruxes because he says it, that Nagini cannot stray away from him anymore and she has to be under his protection at all times.
Exactly.
Well, here's what's interesting, though, is Voldemort was clearly... He was clearly off of his guard, and not just because of his emotion, because... I'm looking on page 550 in the American version, and it says that a modicum of calm cooled his rage now. And so he was calming himself down, and you can visibly notice it in the writing that he's not nearly as angry as he had been previously. And then he starts thinking in his mind rationally, logically, where everything was. First of all, it's a little ironic that one of Voldemort's major downfalls would be his emotions. And secondly, the fact that... Once he had calmed down, he hadn't thought to himself, oh, geez, you know, I know how this connection with me and Harry works. I was just really pissed off, and perhaps I should close my mind down right now before I start thinking about finding all these secret hiding spots. But he didn't. So not only was he emotional, he just wasn't even being logical either.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, Harry was in his mind, but I don't think he ever thought of the fact that Harry might still be out there subconsciously aware of Voldemort's mind.
Yeah, I think he's got the Potter issue kind of really taken care of in his mind. I mean, he knows he's still out there, but certainly had no clue how far Dumbledore had led Harry until now. Mm-hmm. But
well, he had no clue about how much Dumbledore knew about him, too.
Yeah, to begin with. Well, I always wanted to say, I mean... Just the idea that Voldemort has prized possessions, that he's human enough to have a sort of grand scale of importance. Yes, he's egocentric, and you know, just the fact that you can follow a pattern with Voldemort is still really cool, and kind of leads to his downfall because Dumbledore is able to use, you know, certain things and try and figure out what's important to Voldemort. You know, everybody has a sort of set of things that are very important to them, and it's just, you know, it's Voldemort's Voldemort's just shocked that so many, you know, that somebody took so much interest, I guess, but he's now very in danger. So
what I really like about this whole going through his head, what Voldemort does, is the most interesting thing is it answers the question, what happens when a Horcrux is destroyed? Because he goes through, like in page 443 in the UK version, it says, but surely if the boy had destroyed any of the Horcruxes, he, Lord Voldemort, would have known, would have felt it. He goes, well, it's true that he didn't feel that the diary was destroyed when it was by Harry, but surely any of the other ones, he would have felt it. He's trying to convince himself that even though he knows the truth, that he himself can't feel a Horcrux being destroyed.
he's scared, which is, I mean, it's so great for JKR to be able to personalize and characterize this, because previously she's characterized him as being so evil, like in the graveyard scene, and then in pretty much every other scene, you know, up till now, he's been very evil, not vulnerable at all, very, well, he's always been vulnerable, but, you know, for all different reasons. Now he's scared, and that's something you don't see in Voldemort very often. You know, she only characterized him as being scared before when he was a kid, you know, and was fearful of Dumbledore as a kid. And it's just, it's so brilliant to have this. I think it's very well written.
Yeah, but would he be able to feel it really? I mean, you know, we talked about him really being capable of feeling any sort of emotion, and, you know,
Dumbledore doubts it.
The fact that he split himself into all these different pieces, I would think, would have such a negative effect on him that, you know, even if one of his pieces of his soul were destroyed, I mean, you're constantly cutting your soul into smaller and smaller halves, or, you know, fractions, however you want to phrase it. Yeah, so aren't you losing a bit of yourself every single time that you do that? So the ability maybe to feel just diminishes every single time that you create a Horcrux.
That's what Dumbledore said. Dumbledore said that specifically. He said he thinks, you know, Voldemort was so out of touch with his other, you know, the fragments of soul. His soul is so fragmented that he doubts he'd be able to feel if a Horcrux was destroyed, because Harry asked him that.
Yeah. Well, he also has a half-life also. If you recall, he did drink the blood of unicorns in the first book. So maybe that made him, you know, numb to the fact that he can't feel his Horcrux being destroyed too.
Yeah, it's possible.
I don't know. I'm always constantly trying to think of what the whole significance of him drinking unicorn blood did to his fate.
Yeah, that hasn't come out, but that's not really terribly a big deal, I guess. Because, I mean, he lost his parasitic body and then was reborn, so I think it kind of passed over, maybe. Maybe he escaped the unicorn blood curse.
So, but moving along.
Then it's the end of the chapter. Then it's the end of the chapter.
Well, no. Okay, after Harry comes out of the Voldemort coma, so to speak, he tells Harry and Hermione, or Ron and Hermione, about what happened. And what I find really interesting is this is the first time that Hermione is very intrigued on what Harry saw in Voldemort. This actually was a positive thing that actually happened to it, and she's not complaining about him going into Voldemort's mind.
I mean, you know, for the longest time, yeah. Finally Hermione's coming around and pulling the stick out of her, you know what. And it's like,
did you just really say that?
Yeah, because I feel like obviously this was a huge thing for them to know.
It's what they needed.
And I mean, yeah, whether Hermione wanted to hear it or not, she needed to hear it. So,
well, and also basically,
I thought
there's no choice.
You know, Voldemort's on the run now after them. There's no point in cares now.
There's no choice.
Because they just need to get to Hogwarts. They need to find
their way. So they realize it's a race against time. And at this point, you know, Harry's rushing to get to Hogwarts. And Hermione's saying, no, we need to make a plan. Which would probably be a good idea, taking a look at what happened in Gringotts and what happened.
No, that's the whole thing. It's a good idea to move forward. Because their previous plan sucked. They spent 3 weeks doing exactly that, planning at Shell Cottage, and at the end it just turned out to be whim of the, you know, on every whim, whatever they could do to escape.
But this situation is just a little bit different than Gringotts. They broke in, they know where they are now, they know they're after the Horcrux, and they know that Voldemort's on their tail now. They don't really have any time to plan anything anyway now. Whether they could in Gringotts, they can't.
Right,
now.
But even if they did, it would be worthless because they don't know. They don't control the board. They don't know at all what they're facing.
Well, they don't know what's going on now. The only thing is they know is that it's in Hogwarts, and that's the only thing they can do. They have no idea what's at Hogsmeade or Hogwarts. All they can do is just go there now and just face what they can, because there's no way that they can find it out for themselves anyway.
Wow. And also, the thing about rushing the plan. The last time they rushed the plan, they went to the Ministry of Magic, and, I mean, yeah, they got out of it, of course, but that plan also sort of fell apart, and they rushed that. Remember when it's basically the same situation. Hermione was like, we need time to plan, and Harry was like, no, we got to do it now. And Harry was right, but, you know, this is what happens. And
I just want to ask a question here, because I never thought of this until this point, but anybody reading this here say, wait a second, Voldemort's going through all the Horcruxes, and he's only up to 6.
Well, there's the one in his body.
No. my point being, obviously, Harry is a Horcrux, but Harry but doesn't
eight.
Even...
There's actually eight Horcruxes.
Harry's sort of a Horcrux. Well, it's like...
Yeah, there is actually seven without Harry being one. I'm pretty sure. Because there's the tiara of Ravenclaws, the lost diadem, and then there's the cup and the snake and the one in Voldemort's body and the diary.
Right, but the conversation with Dumbledore was that before, he had created seven Horcruxes. That's what Dumbledore believed back in Half-Blood Prince.
And you're saying Voldemort is listing six here?
Well, then the locket, which is...
He's only getting up to six, yeah. The diary has already been destroyed. He knows that. They've already broken into Gringotts. He knows that. So he's going the lake, and we know the locket's already been destroyed. The Gaunt Shack, we know the ring has already been destroyed, and Nagini, and then Hogwarts. That's only six. So did anybody, at this point in reading...
No, there's actually seven.
All Mike is saying is that, why don't we realize Voldemort is only counting six and not seven? We should have noticed that he's only counting six, because then we would wonder, oh, where's
the seven? Part of his soul is within Harry. Yeah, exactly. That's my point. Yeah, when reading this, did you ever say to yourself, hey, maybe that book that MuggleNet wrote might have been right? You know what I'm saying?
I mean, if I read it,
I didn't read that book. I wish I could tell you, Micah, that I said that, but I didn't actually read that book.
Nice plug. But Elisa, you know what I'm trying to say here? Did anybody just notice the fact?
No, I completely understand, Micah. That's a good point.
But Harry didn't even think of it, which was a little weird.
Well, I think it's convenient. I don't think they would have time to have figured that out. Yeah. And look,
Harry's worked out fine anyway.
Harry's caught in the moment too. I mean, he's not sitting there counting on his fingers. He's just concentrating exactly on what Voldemort's saying. He's looking for new information, not to pick up. He's not trying to read in between the lines.
Yeah.
I don't know. Right. I don't know.
Anyway.
I try to act like Joe sometimes to give Joe answers. But so Harry realizes that they can't all be separated. So they go under the invisibility cloak together, which is another throwback to Sorcerer's Stone. And it's cute, but...
Well, except they're now taller and you can see their feet now.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
Well, anyway, okay, so that's the end of the chapter. It's a nice transition into the next one, which is called The Missing Mirror, which we'll get into next week. And so... Oh, wait, Andrew, did you have a quote quiz?
I don't have one prepared, so I'm just gonna look it up right now. If I want to put my cat out, I will, and be damned to your curfew. That's a quote quiz this week. All right, we have a few voicemails. Just three, actually. I gotta tell you guys, we haven't been getting many voicemails. We only got one from the UK, zero from Australia. In the past week, I'm talking about, since I fixed the voicemail line. Yeah, so guys, feel free to call in the contact information at the end. Ask some good questions, please. We like good questions. Okay, here's the first question now.
Hey, guys. I've been listening for a little while, and I noticed last week that Mike used the S-word twice, only one instance of which was censored. The other one was... You know, near the middle of minute 59, I think. Just wanted to let you guys know, because I'd hate for there to, you know, my own parents kind of listen to what I listen to make sure that it's all right. And aww. I hate to have to stop listening to MuggleCast and switch over to that other podcast.
I don't know what he's talking about.
Anyway, keep up with the good work. I love the show. Thanks, bye.
Yeah, that was my fault, Mike. I'm sorry.
What the hell I was thinking. I mean, what did I say? Bullshit.
Yeah, you said it twice, and the first time I had it bleeped, and then the second time I didn't.
Yeah.
See, what happens is I'll edit, and then it's playing, and I'll sort of like go off in my own world. I start thinking about, like, you know, Hairspray.
The Spice Girls.
And the Turnblad. Spice Girls. I was going to say Spice Girls, Lisa. You know me well. And then I just, you know.
Mm-hmm. I think it's hilarious, though, how everyone tries to tell you that you swore.
Well, actually, we didn't get much feedback about this one, which I'm happy about.
Oh, good.
Everyone rags on Laura when she curses, but when it's Micah, I guess they're just scared of you, Micah.
No,
that's the only
thing I can think of.
Yeah, as well
everyone
they should be.
Everyone loves Micah's dulcet tones. They'll take it however they can get it.
You can say that again. But don't. All right, here's another. There's only.
So I apologize.
We only have two this week, so here's the final one.
Hi, it's Matthew B. You finally got the voicemail working again. That's good. But, I've listened to the live show, and I just wanted to make a comment. Someone was saying that. What was it?
I don't know.
Something about the books, and you've missed out if you haven't read them. But I'd just like to comment and say, no, you haven't, because as good as the books are, and I know that they are good, they're very good because I've read them, but you're not missing out if you haven't read them, because you get something different if you just watch the films, then you get something different than, let's say, or maybe if you just read the books and never saw the films, you get something different from each side, or even if you did both, you'd get something different. You know, you get a different view of the whole series and that. So I just like to say that. But if you haven't read the books, you're not missing out. You're gonna see it in a different way, you know. So I just like to leave a comment. Okay, thanks. Bye.
I think it's a really interesting perspective.
It's a good way of looking at it too.
Yeah.
I think in the perspective of like fans of the books who have seen the movies too, it's an inclination to say that you're missing out if you haven't read the books and have only seen the movies, because there is so much more. I mean, this guy's saying that they're two totally different mediums, that you're not really necessarily missing out. They're just so different. But I think we're allowed to say that to people that they're missing out, because that happens to be a matter of opinion.
Well, that's always the consensus with people who read the books. Fans of books that are made into films will always, you know, hold on to their books more than the films, because they love every single part of it. And
well, see,
every time something's
listened,
cut.
Yeah. I saw the movie first, and I'm still going to say that if you don't read the books, you're missing out on a lot. A lot of good creative
definitely.
Stuff.
Same here. I completely agree with that.
Well, yeah. I think many of us who actually go see the movies see it with Potter fans of the movies who haven't read the books. And some of the movies, I mean, they get so confusing for some of the people who haven't read the books, and they actually, you know, my brother and sister, when they watch the movies, they actually asked me during the film, what just happened? Because sometimes you just need the book to make more sense.
You do, but in the sense that I think we've said before, Sorcerer's Stone and Chamber of Secrets, the films are really special in their own right. I mean, it is a different experience. And
they're also, they don't cut as much.
I do
from
agree
the books.
I disagree with this caller on that. Yeah, you are missing out when you don't read the books. But at the same time, yeah, they're separate, and you do get something unique out of the movies, and I think that's what he's trying to say.
Andrew, I've got to actually get going.
All right.
Okay.
Well, Eric's got to leave now, but everyone's ditching us tonight.
See you guys later. Okay, I'm Eric Skull.
Bye.
Take it easy. Ciao.
All right, bye.
Bye, Eric.
Wait. I'm back. There was something I had to talk about. Before I go, I just wanted to – my girlfriend wants me to mention something about last week's show. It'll be quick. But if you guys recall, we had said that The Root of All Evil was a bad show, and I just wanted to clarify that it's not a bad show.
It's a terrible show.
Do you want to clarify,
Andrew,
or she
we
wants
watch
to
it
clarify?
Every week. No, I want to clarify. It's
me. Scripted. It's bad.
It's Root of All Evil sucks.
I think
and I
it's
love
god
Lewis
awful,
Black,
personally.
But I think it's a horrible show. So I'm sorry, Eric.
I think it's good. Okay. Bye.
Wait, you think it's what?
I think it's.
Oh, sorry. We just lost Eric. That's weird.
That was awesome.
Oh my god,
all right.
Andrew.
Make the music connection.
Eric Free. All right. Well, we have a few songs here chosen by Eric out of his personal collection.
Library.
Personal library. He gave you a challenging one, Micah. I guess we'll start with you. It's gosh, I want to see what you
know this song.
I want to see what you do with this.
All right, let's go.
Tub Thumping by Chumbawamba.
Get up again.
Get I guess you want to just listen to the chorus for your answer. Your answer to that question.
Yeah. My math teacher actually used to play that song during exams. That has absolutely zero relevance.
And
to,
why would she do
make
that?
The music connection. He did it. I don't know. He actually played the radio when we took exams.
Oh, so it was always on the radio. That's understandable.
Yeah. I'm dating myself a little bit by saying that it was on the radio
yeah.
a fair
You're
amount
old.
Of time. Not that old.
Anyway.
You guys knew that song.
Yeah.
Of course.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh.
Oh,
okay.
Heck, yeah.
All right. I was going to say that there's two things that came to mind. One was, was it when Ron was playing Quidditch and trying to make the team, and no matter what, he just kept going at it. But then there's another one. I think overall, you know, what Harry's gone through, he's got knocked down a bunch of times, but he just keeps getting back
so
up
true.
And fighting.
Ah, yes.
So, yeah, that's my tribute to Chumbawamba.
All right, Elisa, it's your turn.
All right. But it wasn't because I didn't know enough. I just knew too much. I think you're crazy.
Make the connection, Lisa.
Oh, this is an easy one for me. This is totally Dumbledore's song for Grindelwald.
Oh my god.
Does no one else
wonderful.
See that connection?
No, I like it. Yeah, I like
God.
It. I get it because he was gay. I get it.
I don't know about God, you guys, but whenever we do this segment, I always think of like this song as like a musical, and they just break out, start singing. So seeing Dumbledore bust out singing, well, I think you're crazy.
Have you seen? Have you guys seen that movie? You know, 40-Year-Old Virgin at the very end, where they all break out into dance.
Yeah.
Have you seen that movie?
Yeah.
That's yes. I see the same thing, Matt. And so I see like Dumbledore in the center singing this to Grindelwald, and you know, Harry and everyone else sort of doing the backup dancing.
They did that at the end of what's the sequel to Bruce Almighty?
Evan Almighty.
Evan Almighty, yeah, they did that at the end of that too. That was funny. That's good. All right. Let's see who's next here. Oh, Matt.
Should I stay or should I go?
Made famous these days by rock bands. Should I Stay or Should I Go by The Clash.
All right. Okay, well, Elisa did give me a little hint, and I fully
no, I didn't.
Fully agree with her. Yeah, you didn't. just take it. Okay. This scene is definitely from Deathly Hallows when Ron argues with the trio about Harry, and he skips out of town.
He's not gonna stay, he's gonna go.
But then come back. Nah, 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 nah. All right, here's mine that I haven't heard yet, mind you. Oh yeah. Oh, I love this song. This is my theme song every day of my life.
Yep.
Jeez. I can think of several little examples. Okay, what I could think of is when Dumbledore's army just goes and fights the Death Eaters during that whole scene in Order of the Phoenix. Like, I don't know if they're back in town, but it's sort of just like, this is sort of like a a kick butt song,
or you a little more relevant to the song. How about the Order fighting them in Order of the Phoenix?
Yeah.
When the order comes back.
That's a better one. Yeah. I wish. I just wish these songs were a part of these films. It would be so amazing. It would. It really would. Oh, jeez.
You are awful.
What?
Chicken soup.
For your soul.
It's a voicemail this week. It's a chicken soup voicemail. She wasn't sure if she could call it in, but of course you can. You can do anything you want.
Hi, this is Edith. I'm 13 from Phoenicia, New York. And I was just calling to do a chicken soup. I don't know if you can do that through the phone.
Yeah, you can.
This isn't like one of those kind of really sad things, but I just wanted to thank you, especially with the end of Pickle Pack coming so soon, or like pretty much like it's now, for everything and all the hard work you've done with Pickle Pack and with MuggleCast in general. I can't imagine putting that much time into anything except like obsessing over you guys. So yeah, thank you so much. It's been like a wonderful 2.5 years. So yeah, I love you.
Aww.
Bye.
Aww.
I thought that was sweet.
Thank you very much.
Pickle Pack has ended. It's been a year. Can hardly believe it. Pickle Pack has been around for a year. It's all said and done.
I'm a slacker.
Coming soon is Cucumber Pack.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to be a big hit.
Hey, that's all yours, buddy.
That's fun by me.
I'm sure it would be.
Yeah. Okay, Mike. You can cut the innuendo now. Don't appreciate that. All right, and finally today, it is time to announce the third place winner of the Create Your Own MuggleCast segment contest. Correct, Matt?
Yes. Woo! We got a lot of entries. I can't even remember how many. But once again, they were all very good. Thank you so much for sending them in. I had so much fun listening to every single one of your segments, and yeah, they were really good. Andrew, did you listen to some of them?
Yeah, I listened to all of them when we were judging, and yeah, they were great. I'm never disappointed by the creativity that our listeners come up with.
No.
And I like how a lot of them use the Hedwig's theme song. They just rip it off of our MP3 file of the show, and you know, it's nice.
Yeah,
so,
it's not copyrighted.
Congrats to you. Right.
We're not going to sue.
Well, no, I'm not saying there's anything wrong with it. I'm just saying it's creative. But yeah, everyone's very clever. It's great.
But alas, we only had to pick three that were the top ones. So
we're going to play the third place winner today. And then this person is going to go home with the third place prize from the wonderful Olivons at olivons.com. They will be winning a $15 gift certificate for purchasing anything at Olivons. Scarves, ties, wands, you name it. Olivons has it. Olivons.com. So, Matt, who is the third place winner?
The winner for this week is Nick Bailey. He's 13 years old, and he did this by himself. He is entitling this segment the Wizarding Wireless Network segment. And so,
cool. Let's play it now.
Let's play it now.
Introducing Wizarding Wireless Network, work.
On behind your ear and learn to rock all night. So give me some of that Wizard Rock. So give me some of that.
All right, so let's jump in right in here. Our first band is the Remus Lupins. All right, and so we're going to play a song, which is the title song of their album, I Was a Teenage Werewolf. Our second song, Fate of Severus Snape is also by the Remus Lupins.
But I would never my back on some Death Eater who sold James and Lily out. Well, the truth changes everything, and there's no way for us to argue now. Snape is not what he appeared.
The Remus Lupins do some really great wizard rock. They're just one of my absolute favorite bands. When I was doing research for this segment, I bought a ton of their music. So let's see them off with The Wizarding World at War.
The one selects a wizard as his fate, yeah, chooses you, not the other way. And I hope when the time comes, I can do my part. But we're locked in an epic feud. So many, oh, so much and so few. It's with steadfast hope that I look ahead. I have faith that will come out on top.
Our next band featured is the Whomping Willows, the one-man band. All right. Up first, the song in which Harry and Draco secretly want to make out. Just so you know, I don't support that. It's just, it was at the top of the list, so I thought I better play it.
Potter, give us a sign. Can't commit to Ginny, so what do you have in mind? Give me three guesses. Is it Professor McGonagall? Is it Lavender Brown? No, it's Draco and Harry sitting in a tree.
Up next, Cedric Had It Coming, once again by Whomping.
It's such a cliche. You've been at Hogwarts long enough to know that Harry's gonna get through whatever comes his way.
And to see the Whomping Willows off, Wizard Rock Heartthrob.
Rockin' wasn't enough. If you're gonna score with groupies, then you gotta be a hunk. Can't get by with overwhelming talent alone. And man, that's all I got. Man, that's all I got. Could've been a Wizard Rock Heartthrob. Could've been a star of the show. Could've been a Wizard Rock Heartthrob, but Dumbledore found Matt Majacomo.
Alrighty, up next, the one, the only, Harry and the Potters. And I picked the first song special for Andrew, presenting Voldemort Can't Stop the Rock. Up next, one of my personal favorites by Harry and the Potters, Spew. Alrighty, we'd like to thank all the bands that we had on today. We are approaching our time limit, so we're going to wrap the show up. Alright, so if you'd like to send any comments or questions to us, please email us at mugglecastwwn@gmail.com. Yes, that's mugglecastwwn for Wizarding Wireless Network @gmail.com. All right, now let's wrap it up with host favorites. Alrighty, that didn't really work. But anyway, this is my personal favorite, The Wizard Rock Twist by the Remus Lupins.
Well, it starts in the morning when you get out of bed and take a look in the mirror of Paris said. It's clear as day that your true desire's to do the twist. You know the magic words that you need to say, and the music comes from the record you enchanted to play. Put on your awesome tie and you scream out loud, I'll do the twist. You head down to the library and you know just the band that you're gonna see. Yeah, you love them true and they love you too, so do the twist. The Wizard Rock Show.
I'm Nick Bailey. Good night, everybody.
All right, great job, Nick Bailey. Did that all on his own. I thought that was good because a lot of people have been asking for some Wizard Rock music on the show, and Nick did it for us.
Mm-hmm. It was really nice. So. I'm surprised we don't do that. Why don't we do that on the show?
Honestly, about a year ago, year and a half ago, I had a segment in the works called MuggleCast Jukebox, and I wanted to have an interview with a Wizard Rock band on the show and then play like a song or two. But this is the amount of the production that would require is a little too much at the time-wise.
But just didn't have that extra time. Congratulations, Nick, for winning third place.
Again, he'll be winning a $15 gift card from olivons.com, www.olivons.com.
Woo! Okay.
He can pick a wand, a robe, whatever he wants. Just make sure it's worth $15. Or you can put $15 towards your purchase as well.
Yeah, you can do whatever you want. It's your gift card.
So next week, what's happening,
Matt? Next week, we are going to be announcing the second place winner, which I can't announce yet, can I?
No, we'll make people wait. But anyway, that does wrap up our show for today. We want to remind everyone about our contact information. Michael, what's the P.O. box?
P.O. Box is P.O. Box 3151, Cumming, Georgia 30028.
Hey, we're looking for your voicemail questions. So remember, if you're in the United States, you can dial 1-218-20-MAGIC. If you're in the United Kingdom, you can dial 020-8144-0677. And if you're in Australia, you can dial 02-8003-5668. You can also Skype the username MuggleCast. Just remember that no matter how you call us, remember to keep your message under 60 seconds and eliminate as much background noise as possible. You can also use MuggleCast.com to contact us via the handy feedback form or use any one of our first names at staff.mugglenet.com. You can also visit MuggleCast.com for a variety of community outlet links, including our MySpace, our Frapper, our YouTube, What is going on with me today? Our MySpace, Facebook, YouTube, Frapper, Last.fm, and the fan listing in the forums. And you can also dig the show at dig.com and vote for us once a month at Podcast Alley.
Yeah.
So I think that does it. We had 6 people at the beginning of the show. We ended up with 4.
Nah.
So you guys survived it all. Thank you.
Fantastic.
Great job, guys.
Fantastic 4. The MuggleCast Quartet.
Nah, like Fantastic 4.
Fantastic 4. That's right, because of my rock hard body.
So that wraps up our show for today. Normally right here I would say apologies to J.K. Rowling, but we're out of time. But Matt thinks it's not cool for me to say that. So I'm Andrew Sims.
I'm Micah Tannenbaum.
I'm Matthew Britton.
And I'm Elisa Mofford.
We'll see everyone next week for episode 144. Bye-bye.
Bye.